move on to F, which is agenda decisions.
Okay, so this is paper 1F, returning to the topic of agenda decisions. We've obviously discussed agenda decisions at the last couple of meetings, and you remember in June, kind of briefed you about agenda decisions and how the committee uses them, and the point we were particularly drawing out was to say the agenda decision is so much more than just a statement saying the committee has considered this question and it's decided not to do standard setting, because in the majority of cases, the agenda decision then goes on to provide some very helpful explanatory material about how you'd apply the requirements in our standards to the particular scenario outlined in the question. And this, of course, is all to support high quality and consistent application of our standards. And at the last meeting, as part of the handbook review, as just Richard alluded to, of course, we decided to extend the use of board decisions and actually to allow the board on occasion to publish agenda decisions, again with the aim of supporting consistent application. I think at the last meeting we also highlighted we had received some feedback, or the board had received some feedback, sorry, to be more specific, about the status and role of agenda decisions in response to an exposure draft that they issued earlier last year that was trying to provide some practical help to companies when they decide to change their accounting policies as a result of an agenda decision from the committee. So this paper was designed to address that feedback, and in the first part of the paper, we've set out our explanation about why we think the current non-mandatory status of agenda decisions is appropriate and why we're not proposing any changes as part of the handbook review to that status of agenda decision and their role in supporting IFRS standards. And in particular, what we highlighted in the paper is that the style of an agenda decision is often very similar to the non-mandatory illustrative examples that accompany an IFRS standard, and furthermore their content refers to and reproduces the relevant, both the relevant mandatory requirements in the standard as well as reproducing relevant information from the non-mandatory material that accompanies the standard, such as the basis for conclusions. And we tried to illustrate that for you in the appendix to this paper, which I hope you printed out in colour. But very simply, it was just designed to show to you that an agenda decision, how much of what it says is directly drawn from either the standard, which is in yellow, or the accompanying materials. And so given that, we think it would be confusing and harmful, effectively, if agenda decisions had mandatory status, the same status as the standard. And we also think it would be... you couldn't really consider the status of agenda decisions in isolation. You'd need to consider in conjunction with the other material that is non-mandatory that accompanies a standard, the illustrative examples, the basis for conclusions. And although we didn't sort of draw this out a lot, but we did highlight effectively that the matter goes, in our mind, beyond due process, because effectively it seems to us that it would really be changing the nature of IFRS standards. And that would need consideration. And we also highlighted that changing the status of agenda decisions, we worry about what impact that would have on the effectiveness of the committee in responding to questions, real questions, out in the marketplace on a timely basis. So, as I said, the board considered this feedback in December, and the unanimous view of the board in December was that the current status and role of agenda decisions is appropriate. So we're not proposing any changes to the due process around them, but as you can see in paragraph 18 of this paper, we do think that the handbook review does provide the opportunity to provide an enhanced description and strengthen the description of agenda decisions. And I think in particular drawing out the point that the explanatory material in agenda decisions cannot add or change the requirements in the standard. And given some of the feedback that we saw, I think it will really help improve the understanding about what agenda decisions are and what they're not. And also, I think, will ensure discipline in how the committee reaches its conclusions about whether to publish an agenda decision and ultimately the board. Now, in the second part of the paper, we've addressed a practical challenge that can arise when a company determines that as a result of an agenda decision, it needs to change its accounting policy because of the new information provided in that agenda decision. And the circumstances we're thinking of here is when an agenda decision is published soon before the company's reporting date. So imagine that the Interpretations Committee publishes in December and a company has a December year end. You can see it could be unreasonable for a company to make its assessment and implement any change in accounting policy that it determines it needs to make for its December year end, especially if it's got to make system changes. Now, the board has considered whether or not to do standard setting on this point, and in the exposure draft, it decided not to, and it recently affirmed that position not to do standard setting, but it did make a statement in the exposure draft about its expectations that companies should be entitled to sufficient time to change its accounting policy in this type of situation. And that statement, many people thought, was helpful. So what we thought was is that that statement naturally belongs in the due process handbook as part of the description of agenda decisions. So we're also recommending in paragraph 22 of this paper just to add a piece about this expectation that the companies would have a reasonable period of time. So I think that's what I just wanted to say about that paper. Obviously, any questions?
There is a specific ask of the committee in this memo that we approve this approach to agenda decisions. I see Larry has his.
Yeah. You know, one of the goals, right, is global consistency. Another goal is enforceability. Another goal is auditability. And when we say it's not mandatory, in many parts of the world, people will just focus on it's not mandatory, period. And you don't have strong regulators consistently around the world. Quite honestly, you don't have consistently strong auditors around the world. You don't have consistently strong boards and audit committees that an audit firm trying to do the right thing goes to an audit committee. And if the words are, it's not mandatory, you know, we're really hurting ourselves in a very big way in terms of consistency, enforceability, auditability. The other point in terms of sufficient time, totally agree, but it seems that we should say more than you have sufficient time. You should say if there is a change, if information has come out that tells you that maybe your accounting will need to change, you should have some disclosure responsibilities. You know, Alan, SAB 74 kind of stuff.
I think you will be pleasantly, I don't want to say surprised. I think you will be, you will agree. We agree with your, I agree with your second point. So I think the due process handbook should not just say you have time. I think the point here is, and I think the point to be consistent with what the board is saying, I'm actually not sure, well, let me, to your first point, then I want to come back to your second point. To your first point, I'm actually not sure it's a committee responsibility to decide whether these are mandatory or not. I think the board deliberated this point in December and reached the conclusion it reached, had the feedback that it had on IAS 8 when it did that, and at least the chair of this committee believes that that's now settled law and it's not within our jurisdiction to reopen it. But I agree with you that it follows from the board's decision that what we have got here, and I want to come back to kind of how we got there, but the committee has said we are not going to, actually, let me do this in a slightly longer form way. I hate to waste your time, but I think I'm wasting your time. The way this whole process works, a question comes into the committee. The committee has, under our handbook, the ability to say, we will engage in a mandatory process. Either we'll propose a narrow-based amendment, which it will either do itself or do with the board or give to the board. It will say we will do an interpretation, which is mandatory and becomes part of the standards when it is completed. Or it will say, we think the standard is sufficiently clear as is that we should not do either of those other things, and instead we will tell people we are not going to do any of either of those other things, and the standard is what it is. And that actually used to be what the Interpretations Committee did. It would either do standard setting, or it would issue an interpretation, or it would issue something called a rejection notice, which is, we've decided not to act in response to your question. And then the next step was, we're going to give a rejection notice, but we're going to explain to the world how we got to that rejection notice. And if you look at what Henry describes as Appendix B, Appendix A, it will look at some of the authoritative stuff or some of the non-authoritative stuff like the basis for conclusion and say, this is why we think it's clear enough that we don't have to do one of those first two things. And we now call it an intended decision and not a rejection notice. But it strikes me that the board, given that background, reached the right conclusion when they decided that rejection notice, agenda decision, shouldn't be mandatory. But it also means that the proper response of a preparer when it sees an explanatory agenda decision is to say, how close are these facts to mine? And a preparer has a responsibility with its advisors, i.e. its auditors, among other people, to say, how close are these facts to mine? Are they distinguishable? Or should I, in light of this agenda decision, which provides me with some explanatory information as to how the board thinks the answer is X, how the committee thinks the answer is X, I have a responsibility to think about that and whether or not I should make an accounting policy change in light of that pronouncement. And if I have a responsibility to do it and I decide to do it, I then should have enough time to implement that change and report going forward. So it's not just let's give enough time. It's, as to your point, preparers, I think our desire is to have preparers look at agenda decisions and then make a determination as to whether that agenda decision should cause them to change their accounting policy, and if so, to make the necessary change. And we don't expect them to do that in 3 days. And depending upon how hard it is, we don't expect them to do it in 2 months. And I think we want to make that second point, the totality of that second point, not just the time point, but the responsibility point in the handbook. But your first point, I hear you, and on Sue, I think it's settled. Michelle?
Thank you. No, actually, Larry said exactly very well what I was going to raise. And when I read the sort of what was proposed, I was wondering if actually, rather than say it's not mandatory, we should say that there's an expectation that's going to be followed, basically, more explicitly. And on the timing, I think the way you describe it, which is it's practically not possible to do it because, we are 3 days away from closing or whatever, is very different from, a wording that could leave it to what about never or, at some point, basically. So I'm wondering if there is a way to, through the wording, manage both this non-compulsory, non-mandatory nature, but make it, a strong, desirable outcome, and on timing, narrowing, basically, the window of...
Just stay on the terminology, Michelle. I think we're very much trying to link to the state of the standard, so we're not saying they're not mandatory. We're saying if they don't have the status of IFA standards. So that's, I know that's just a wording point, but just to highlight, we're linking it to, what is the IFA standard versus the materials that accompanies that standard that isn't actually an integral part of the standard. So we're saying the agenda decision doesn't have the status, the same state standard.
What is the purpose of that? Is that to avoid going through the whole process?
No, I think it's the point of IFRS. What is the standard is defined in the IFRS standard. So there's a definition about what constitutes a standard. Mm. And when we issue a standard, there'll be illustrative examples very often. There'll be a basis for conclusion. And there's a clear rubric that says these are not part of the standard, but they accompany the standard. There's a clear understanding that people read those materials to understand the standard, but there's a very clear specification in our literature about what constitutes IFA standards. And so if you were to change the agenda decisions and say anything other than that they have the same status as standards, you are changing what constitutes IFA standards.
It just becomes incredibly messy. And in practice, so we have an issue in Brazil where there is a method of revenue recognition in the real estate sector which is not compliant with our standards. The local securities regulator in practice was not convinced of that, so they brought an issue to IFRIC. IFRIC took an agenda position making clear that that was not as it should be done. Now we're still hopeful we can resolve the issue in Brazil, but should they go ahead with that method, we will put on our website that Brazil complies with IFRS except for this thing where the practice is not in accordance with our standards. If I cannot imagine that any auditor would have any problem with not being able to convince its preparer that it's not that it could not sign off on the financial statement saying this is in full compliance with IFRS.
Teresa?
As a result of what Hans just told me, I'm now confused. But in fact, I think I have a lot of sympathy with what Larry said at the beginning. And what I was going to say was, why do we label things and use the label of not mandatory? Because that could be quite dangerous, because I can see that people say, it's not mandatory, we don't have to do it. And the question I have is, if two sets of facts are identical, I know that this exists in theory rather than practice, would the expectation be that they would be followed?
If a preparer looks at the fact pattern behind an agenda decision, and concludes that it is not distinguishable on a determinative point from its own situation, I think it's fair to expect that the board would anticipate that they would make a policy change.
In which case it is.
But that's their responsibility. And
so maybe I like the way that you've explained it, and it's very clear. So maybe somehow we've
been using mandatory, and it in fact appears in what we've been thinking about. But and I'm certainly open-minded to think about what we're saying is it is not an accounting, an agenda decision is not an accounting standard, and it's not part of the accounting standards.
And that's just to be clear, that's not something we've made up for this purpose. This concept already exists in the way our literature works.
Right. That was the other thing I was going to say. I hear Larry, and I'm sympathetic to him. I hear you. I'm sympathetic to you. I disagree with you, but I'm sympathetic to you. But the important point is, it is not within this committee's purview to debate this question. The board interpreted the IFRS standards in all their history in a particular way in December, and they made a decision. And what we, I think, have to do is to try to be as explicit as we can in the due process as to I suppose two things. One, the board has made a statement that there should be a process and time follow and time allowed in the context, in the aftermath of an agenda decision. And the right place to address that is the handbook. And secondly, I think what we're asking the committee, I think what the staff and the foundation, and not to put too fine a point on it, I am asking the committee for approval on is, in light of where we are, and in light of the fact that we have tentatively agreed to allow under different circumstances something we're now calling board agenda decisions, it's important to provide a roadmap, and the right place for that roadmap is the handbook, which is kind of where users look and preparers look to figure out what we're doing. To add a section to the due process handbook about agenda decisions and to make it clear that the board can do them under certain circumstances, that the interpretations committee has this process I described earlier. It gets questions. It either sets standards or adopts, puts something on a standard setting agenda, decides to adopt an interpretation, or decides not to do standard setting. And to announce that it's not going to do standard setting in an agenda decision, and it can stop there. But it also has the ability to say, and the reason we're not going to do agenda standard setting is because for the following reasons, we think the standard is clear without doing further standard setting. And then to lay out this material, and that itself is not standard setting. That's explaining to the world what the standard says. And then, if the committee decides to do that, preparers have the following responsibilities. And that, I think, is what's in front of the committee in terms of a revised version of the due process handbook. And I think, in all honesty, the starting point is to accept the board's conclusion that agenda decisions are not standard setting. Michelle?
And I don't think anything that was said disagree with what you just said. I think the point is simply...
I think Larry actually...
Well, Larry
may actually... I don't want to put words in Larry's mouth, but I think...
Okay.
What Larry articulated, and it was articulated a lot in some of the feedback on IAS 8, is that when the Interpretations Committee issues an agenda decision that includes explanatory material, that that should be taken by the preparer community as the equivalent of standard setting. And that's not what I think the board
did. Okay, but once you've accepted that, why can't you just, you know, manage the language in a way that you don't sort of create a, you know, a big...
I mean, if it's the word, quote, unquote, mandatory that is troubling people, one does not have to talk about, quote, unquote, mandatory. I mean, I think the issue is it's not standard setting, and in a principles-based world, that produces the conclusions it produces, which are frankly not much different from a particular issuer has to decide with its advisors what the right accounting policy is in the context of an agenda decision.
Now, 13. If you're looking at paragraph 13, right, I mean, why do you need to use the words mandatory and non-mandatory? Maybe that's, I go back to what Michelle said earlier. We're probably not that far apart, and there should be a way to finesse it much better than, quite honestly, and it's not a criticism of Henry, but he was trying to navigate through, you know, an area that, quite honestly, to me makes no sense the way it's been articulated.
And if it's paragraph 13 that's worrying you, I don't think anybody's intending 13 to have a life beyond this paper. So the only purpose of using the word mandatory and non-mandatory was to try and illustrate the fact that one of the challenges that we have to deal with when we start talking about the sort of status of agenda decisions is that a lot of it is just replicating existing stuff, and that stuff already has different places in the hierarchy in the way that we formally define our literature. And we're just trying to illustrate that one of the complications of this is, at the end of our board meeting, just to be clear, we almost got to the point where some board members said this is a non-discussion. And it's sort of a non-discussion because 90% or more of these agenda decisions just repeat what is already in the standards. So it's just repeating what's already in the actual front part of the book. And then a whole other chunk of it is already in the back part of the book, and it's just repeating it, and it's just pulling it all together and say, by the way, read these bits, and this is what you need to read to answer this question. So it's really a non-question in the sense that basically this is made up of stuff that's already got a particular status,
right.
We're just repeating it.
Yeah, I think this
and
is
so
that,
it's sort of a non-question, and so maybe by having this discussion, we're making it into more of a question.
I'm not sure this is a DPOC point, but there's a historical aspect to this. Back in the day, the Interpretations Committee would decide to say it's clear enough in the standard. We're not going to issue an interpretation, and we're not going to do narrow-based standard setting. And the agenda decision, then called the rejection notice, simply said, we're not going to do that. And the reason they decided not to engage in A or B was because it was clear enough from the front part and the back part that they didn't need to do A and B. And I don't think people are suggesting that a decision by the Interpretations Committee not to act in response to a question is itself standard setting, or is itself quote unquote mandatory.
I think in paragraph 18, it is very well explained in the proposed text for the it doesn't say agenda decisions are not mandatory. It just says they do not have the status of the standards and therefore cannot add or change requirements in the standards. Mm-hmm. Crystal clear, and there should be no. You don't even have to go there with the words mandatory.
So I think we can address that point. And then really, I think what we're asking the committee, Alan, is is what's in 23B of the paper, which is, can we just help with some clarity on what can and can't be in gender decisions, because that then steers you to which part of the due process handbook we need to adhere to, in terms of how many days commentaries,
right,
all of that stuff.
Right.
And so I think it's 23B for me.
I think where we have to start from, it's in fact pretty straightforward. And to go back to a point, I mean, the one thing that I think is important is that preparers have to be put on notice that they have a responsibility in the face of an agenda decision to make their own decisions as to what it means for them. And, you know, Einstein's theory of relativity applies to them. You can't move faster than the speed of light, which means it can't be instantaneous, even though theoretically it is instantaneous. I mean, that's the problem. That's one of the problems behind Larry's comment, and it's a legitimate problem, which is if it's not itself part of the standards, then X existed before the interpretations committee said anything, and therefore, G, something should have happened back in the day and not just in response to the interpretation. In response to the agenda decision. We know that's not realistic, and what the due process handbook is trying to do is reflect that realism by saying this new information has been put out. People have to have the responsibility to analyze their situation in the light of the new information, and B, have the time to do so. Love a good discussion. Is there, do we have agreement on the board that the handbook, we should try to avoid the use of the word mandatory, and to the extent you'll see it, we'll get rid of it. I'm not nearly as troubled by it as obviously some of the people in the room are, and it's not, from my point of view, I can get rid of it easily. Now, I'm not going to say non-mandatory. I'm just not going to say anything. In light of that understanding, do we have a consensus? Russ? I'm sorry, Russ first.
Paragraph 13 gets struck out. I've heard it's not going to live long anyhow. But in order to make everyone feel comfortable, we should just strike it out.
We won't include that 13 word.
Agreed. Teresa?
If we're looking at the due process handbook, shouldn't it be paragraph 8.3 and 4 that we should be looking at, which is where the real words are in relation to...
What page are you on? Sorry.
The handbook, isn't it?
Oh, the handbook itself.
It talks about interpreting committee agenda decisions. Maybe this is not the time because time is rolling on anyway. But I just want to say that I'm fine with those paragraphs. In fact, the only thing I want to point out is that we have basically not stated the status of agenda decisions, which is fine because we have just basically fudged it. But we have said that the explanatory material should be seen as helpful, informative, and persuasive, right? Effectively, I don't know the history as to why they're called agenda decision, and maybe it's the word decision.
It's a decision because it's a decision not to issue an interpretation or at a standard setting.
Okay, right.
And that's the history
it's
of
kind
it.
Of a bit perverse and reversed, if you know what I mean. But
rejection
okay.
decision was even more perverse, which is the problem.
Okay.
These
are basically almost like binding guidance, i.e., in other words, if you have a set of circumstances, understand it correctly, which fall on all four with these, then you ought to, or the preparers ought to have the sense to follow them.
They ought to reach the conclusion they have to change their accounting policy. I mean, I actually don't think we're saying they must change the accounting policy. I think they ought to take this new information into account and making decisions to change their own accounting law. We're standard setters, guys.
Which is why we shouldn't overemphasize this is not part of the standard.
But it's not.
The wording that Teresa was reading, that was in the pre-read as well somewhere, you know, we ought to be emphasizing the persuasive nature of.
And I think I agree with that. I think we should be, very explicit as to the responsibility of a preparer in the context of a quote unquote agenda decision. And I'm open to a better.
Highly persuasive.
Sorry?
Highly persuasive. If you really want to encourage people to follow it, then you should not just say persuasive. You should say highly persuasive, be encouraged to be followed. Or whatever words that you think that should be more appropriate to accountants and preparers.
Do we have a consensus? Okay. The answer would be yes, we'll go on. We've got a couple more. Mr. Chairman, do I have 10 more minutes? Okay.